Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it's... Maybe it's because he took his jacket off and you can only magic in that kind of jacket.
I don't know. He magicked at the end of the music number.
Oh.
Maybe that was like the end of his powers. Maybe he just needs a long rest in order to gain all of his spells back.
I'm sorry. You've used all your spells. I mean, if it had been a cantrip, you could have... Sorry, my friend. You know...
I don't know. And then like going back into the theater, you know, there was a really good transition about, you know, with them like tap dancing onto the wood and then like showing the feet and kind of like focusing on that. And that's where the transition comes in. There's just a lot of really good transitions in this specific musical number,
yeah.
Like going in and out. And it kind of is like, so musical numbers aren't always diegetic or
what the hell does diegetic mean?
Diegetic is, so you have two terms that I'm going to throw out here, diegetic and non-diegetic. I think I'm getting this right.
We got room for exceptions here.
Right.
Go
it's
for it.
Like diegetic is whether or not it, or diegesis, I think is the correct movie term, is whether or not it's happening inside the world that the characters are in.
Mm.
So you have like diegetic is like outside of it, like it deals with trying to think of like the one time that I heard about this. Okay. So the non-diegetic is when they go over onto the rail. And then into the train car, and then it comes back to being diegetic when they come back to the Egyptian. So it's kind of like musicals, unless they are specifically stated inside the framework of the piece as being within the reality. Like a good example would be Buffy the Musical, where everybody is actually singing and they're like acknowledging that this is actually happening in their world. That would be considered non-diegetic. But other musicals where people aren't necessarily talking about the music as being part of the world is considered diegetic.
Oh, because if I was that baker with that same tray of bread, like always,
yeah.
And that bitch was singing about me, I would cram that bread down her throat and be like, why don't you have some bread now, Belle, you skinny piece of sheet?
Right. So basically, if it's non-diegetic, it's happening inside the world that the actors and the story take place in. If it's diegetic, it's kind of like either or. Like the soundtrack to a movie, mm-hmm. or like when you're out in space and you hear the bangs and everything in space, that isn't actually happening because you don't get any sound in space. It's there mostly for the audience.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
So
I like that.
So that's
or
what
like
I,
an air conditioner always has to have those streams coming out of it. Otherwise, you wouldn't know that it's blowing air.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I feel like. Because he's so nice and because he's not anywhere else in the plot, really, and because, but that being said, like, he's not a negative character in any way. It just doesn't feel like it affects anything for me.
Right.
Other than the fact that he's a delightful ginger, and now I know that about you. I feel like this, it doesn't make me feel an extreme emotion, and you know how I like to feel one way or another, right?
Right.
5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. When I first watched it the first time in the theater, this was my favorite song.
Yeah.
Watching it now, I'm like, I still like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my favorite song.
Yeah.
I got more appreciation for Jennifer Hudson now, and I've got more appreciation for Ian McKellen now. And,
right.
And then whoever plays Mustafa's, because I can't remember his name. Poor man.
Yeah. And then at the very end, he does this like little twirl, and then he goes up into the air, and he gets poofed away by McCavity. And I'm like, hey, that's a really great way to just sort of like poof someone out of a scene. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah. So, and also my note was like, so they know that McCavity is taking cats. Form a search party? No.
So. Nothing can interrupt our ritual.
Yeah, except for Taylor Swift.
So from the ceiling, a golden crescent moon descends.
Mm-hmm. And what do we have? We have Taylor Swift in cat form lounging on said crescent moon.
She has a shaker bottle with her that is emitting the most sparkliest of catnips.
Yes, it's glitter.
She's singing the song McCavity the Mystery Cat.
Yeah.
And this was my second favorite song from when I used to just watch the musical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still pretty up there.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
My note was, well, it would be hard to make this number bad. And then they introduce Idris Elba as McCavity without his coat. And I was like, never mind. They made it bad.
No.
Like, I love Idris Elba, and I think he really sells it, but he's just like in cat suit and
she has shoes on and he doesn't.
Yeah, it's just another one of these weird cats. Like when they put cats with the costumes on, like with Skimbleshanks, it really detracts from that. But nobody else, like if Victoria was in just sort of like a little, like, you know, shirt thing, like a little, like one of the, like a little
vest
like a shawl.
Okay.
And you know, like sometimes you have like those sundresses and they have those little like white shawls that kind of go over it to kind of like hide the cleavage.
Yeah, modesty vest.
Yeah. Or if they just like, I mean, how Mr. Mistopheles has this cute little like button.
My heart.
As sequence jacket and a top hat, which is adorable. Yeah, like
I want it so bad.
Yeah, and even like Judi Dench and Ian McKellen and Jennifer Hudson, all of them get these like these large fur coats. Mm. And McCavity has that at the beginning when we're seeing him throughout, and he's got this really nice top hat. But then he just disrobes with all of it, and it's like,
well, you got to see his pecs.
Yeah,
if you don't see moobs, what are you even here for? I mean, like Taylor Swift's got the most prominent breasticles in this. You can cut that.
Nope, breasticles.
So sorry. So seventh grade me used the word breasticles, and now it's here for you guys, and I'm sorry.
I don't know. Like, maybe it's just a nitpick, and maybe it was something that they thought that the CGI was going to, you know, be that good, and it turns out that it wasn't. And so this is definitely a hindsight critique. I think in the moment, they could have just done some, like, little tests, you know, like, we're going to do a test and see how well this is going to come out and how long it's going to take and pre-production.
As she's descending on the moon, she's been sprinkling out of this little bottle, but then she pulls an entire lever and a whole bunch of catnip comes out at the same time. And then, like, and then Mungo Jerry
and Rumple Teaser. And
I wrote down Mung Jerry. So I'm right off. But yeah. Also Beret Cat, who is a specific one.
I think it's supposed to be Griddlebone, because in Growl Tiger's Last Stand, they also talk about Lady Griddlebone.
Okay, so they steal the can, and while they're all getting stoned off of catnip, they go around and dose all the people who managed to escape.
The people.
Oh, sorry, people. They go around and dose all of the participants who managed to avoid the catnip. But, like, so I was, just before you showed up, I was scrolling Reddit, and on Today I Learned, somebody was like, catnip affects cats, it affects their opioid centers the same way that heroin and morphine, because we call it kitty crack, but like, that's just, we're being colloquial.
was it meth?
No, meth is much more upper, okay. Like in terms of opioids, you're feeling like mellow, and you're, not that I know that much about opioids, but like... Like, if you were on your Oxycontins, like, that would be... So, and it doesn't mean necessarily that you'll crash, but it does bring you down. And so, the fact that they all pass out at the end of this scene makes me mad, but is also kind of true to life.
Right.
They poofed. Oh, so at the end of the song, they've ascended this sparkling light-up staircase.
Pitch kitten. And McCavity's whole thing is he wants to go to the Heaviside Lair, and only old Deuteronomy can make that happen. And she's just like, nah, bruh.
She goes, never. I judge a cat by its soul. I was like, oh, man, there's some people who are going to take umbrage. People are going to find fault with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So they all pass out. And then they're like... They start yelling at Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser.
Before that, McCavity like poofs. So McCavity's been poofing characters left and right. Mm-hmm. We didn't mention, but he does poof Gus at one point at the end of a song.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And at the end of this song, when old Duty's like, nope, not going to go ahead and do that. He's like, fine, then I'll just go ahead and poof you. And he poofs him over to the barge, and he's like, you know, got Growl Tiger, you know, making old Deuteronomy walk the plank, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very climactic. Yeah. And that's when, and she like howls like, no. And that's what like snaps all of the cats out of it. And then they go after Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser.
they scare him right off. Like, they, at one point, Gus does the speech, the fire.
Not yet. That was later. That was after they get old Deuteronomy back, after Mr. Mistopheles.
Oh.
I was glad that they did, you know, tie up that loose end, but right now it's like, they were like, how do we get old Deuteronomy back? It's not like we can just magic her back. And Victoria's like, actually, we can.
Oh, Lord. When they were like yelling about it, they were yelling at Mungo Jerry, and they were like that everybody was fine with everyone else who had been poofed.
Right.
But the fact that they poofed Old Deuteronomy, they're like, that's the line. How dare you?
They knew about Buster Fur Jones. And I mean, if you wanted to argue that as soon as Skimbleshanks gets poofed, that's when they're like, oh, no, it's McCavity. We have to like go and get him back. And then they can't because that's when his musical number comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So you could definitely argue that. But like they knew about Buster Fur Jones and they didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's rude.
Yeah.
I don't like that. They only care about dudes.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, did I rate McCavity for you?
No.
I will. Thank you, kitten. Do you also agree with my 9 out of 10? It's a 9 out of 10 for me. It's a 9 out of 10.
Okay.
Sing-alongable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The song itself, song slaps.
You know?
It's a super good, I really like the soundtrack, even despite the fact, like, I mean, I haven't listened to the soundtrack prior to watching this movie, but maybe I'll go back to it, but it's not like Phantom of the Opera or Les Mis, which are musical soundtracks that I still listen to.
Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. But now we can get to one of my favorite from the musical itself.
Right. And we all said, oh, well, I never was there ever a cat so clever as magical Mr. Mephistopheles.
Does your brain also put in from the We Are Siamese Cats, which is problematic from Lady and the Tramp? The magical Mr. Mephistopheles. My head goes boom, 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 boom. Every time.
No. But that makes sense.
Oh, whatever. Okay.
And his whole thing is that he doesn't have confidence. And Victoria is like, you can bring back Old Deuteronomy. And even like all of the other cats, like Munko Strap, he's like, yeah, you could totally do it. And
so he flicks his wand at the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And this one of the kittens that I now hate less because I found out she's a kitten and not just a jerk.
Yeah.
She, as soon as he flicks at the bed, she jumps at the bed and is like, oh, did it happen? And in the same way that I'll throw Pitch Kitten's favorite toy, which is a piece of garbage, it's a plastic twist tie. She loves them. She loves them. If I throw it and she goes to look for it and she doesn't find it, she'll come back to me and she's like, great, fake out, not dad. throw my toy. And then I'm like, I don't have your toy. So then I just fake throw it. Don't tell her. But I fake throw it. And so she goes for it. And I do it in the same direction as I originally threw the toy. But she goes for it. And then she finds it. And she's like, good. Nice. Nice that time. Good job. Not dad. You did a good job. But when the cat jumps at the bed, I was like, familiar. Very cat-like. Oh! And just because I don't want to forget it, when Ian McKellen is in the back performing his rituals before he gets poofed, before a song, he goes, touch wood is one of his rituals. And you know how he does it? As opposed to like an actor who would touch something wooden, he rubs his face on a post.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was very cat-like.
Yeah.
That's those little cat details that I like about this. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah. So, and that the whole thing about this musical number is that it's just not happening. And it's kind of like Mr. Mephistopheles, like he, you know, doesn't really have confidence because he doesn't really have like a grasp on his magic.
Yeah.
So to speak. And so he like tries for something and it doesn't work. And then he has to try it again.
He doesn't have the confidence of the gravitas that he admired in Gus's character.
Right.
And he said, I'm a huge fan of yours. And that's why I draw the parallel between them, because he wants to be the performer.
Mm-hmm.
He has magic, like literal magic.
Yeah.
So he starts performing these tiny tricks to build himself up and to result in this big crescendo. At one point, he like taps his hat or whatever and he pulls it off. And then there's mice in there singing his chorus.
Yeah.
And I cannot emphasize to you as how much these little children are dressed up as like half-filled water balloons turned upside down of persons.
Yeah.
With like these little bald round heads and these weird bulbousy round bottoms. And they're not the right size for mice. Mice to cats.
Yeah.
Cats to mice. Children to cats.
Yeah.
Cats to children. The math is all bad.
Also, like, you're dealing with adults and children, and you have the adults are cats and the mice are children, and like cats eat mice. It's just, it's weird.
It felt predatory for you?
It felt a little predatory, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it.
It doesn't matter. This is the scene where I realized that Mephistopheles' wand is a pencil.
Yeah.
It's so cute.
It is cute. And it's like one of the things that like I think they really, you know, that they brought in from the stage musical without making it super obvious. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they could have just like done everything like beat by beat with the stage musical here. And they didn't. And I was very grateful for that because, you know, it doesn't, it needs to be translated into something different.
Well, and he sings his chorus and then he dies out because he couldn't immediately bring Deuteronomy back. Mm-hmm. And so then Victoria sings to him.
Yeah.
And then the entire bunch of cats sing to him. And then they all get into it and they're all singing it. It's supposed to be this big crescendo. And he's just like, never was there ever a cat so clever as a magical mist. And he does a flick of his wrist. And then they all tense and look. And they're looking at the bed,
mm-hmm.
and it's silent.
Yeah.
And all of our hearts drop.
Yeah.
And we all feel real sad.
And then we hear someone in the background singing, oh, well, I never was there ever a cat so clever as a magical Mr. Mistopheles.
I entitled this scene, Suddenly Judy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because old Deuteronomy's come back, but it wasn't in front of him. It was behind him.
So cute.
Which makes sense when you think about magic. They don't, I mean, if like everybody was crowding around her bed and if she just sort of puffed there, then it would have just been like everybody would have been really close.
Yeah. I like that she appeared behind them. Mm-hmm. But then they do the big finale of this song where he's like throwing cards that float magically around the room and then flowers, and flowers, flowers,
musical,
flowers.
Musical instruments.
Oh.
My notes say an orgasm of magic.
And they might be getting there because this is where we realize that Victoria and Mistopheles are now romantically inclined.
Yeah.
They rub faces. Oh, but they do a little nose kiss. Mm-hmm. Deuteronomy and Mistopheles do a little nose kiss at the end. It was very cute.
Yeah. And to tie up the loose thread of what about all of the cats at the barge, we shoot back to the barge and McCavity takes Taylor Swift Cat and they poof away. And it's just Growl Tiger that's left with Jenny Any Dots, Bustopher Jones tied to like one area, Skimble Shanks hanging. And on the other side of the barge is Gus the Theater Cat tied up with stuff. And like they're like Growl Tiger is like, you know, distracted by something. I can't remember what, but that's not the important part. The important part is that Jenny Any Dots is like unzipping her cat coat. Yeah, so that way
and the costume from underneath her fur.
She could have escaped this entire time.
Yeah, but instead she's like, I think third act is right. I think I'll climb out and then swing a chain around it and then say something about crazy cat lady.
Yeah, you don't mess with the crazy cat lady. Also, like everyone who got captured did play a part in getting Growl Tiger thrown off the barge. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, I liked it when Gus was just like, the fiend from the fires, whatever. And Guy was like, ah! And he just falls off.
Yeah.
I didn't, however, rate Mr. Mistopheles for you.
Oh, no, you didn't.
And this is, I think I knocked it down a peg or two just because I realized that I'm recognizing this song with a great deal of nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. But now everybody's back at the theater. Everybody's back at the Egyptian.
Well, you see Grisabella kind of like poke her head in to the theater and Victoria notices it. And so she goes out to like greet Grisabella and she tells her, you know, you really need to, she sings Daylight and like, you know, kind of like, this is your song where you have to go ahead and try one more time. Try one more time. Come in here with me. Try singing one more time. And that's when, you know, she kind of like Victoria escorts Grisabella in.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the other cats are like, meow, meow.
Yeah, one of the few times they just speak towards each other, she goes, sing.
Yeah. And like, that's when we have the reprise of Memories, which is, you know, like Jennifer Hudson knocked the first one out of the park. And she does the same with this one.
I would assume that I would be less entertained by the second reprise or the reprise of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to tell you right now, I got goosebumps and I don't normally get like reactive.
Right.
Again, cliches. I will roll my eyes so hard into the back of my head. Her whole delivery, I feel like everyone's reaction to her is genuine,
mm-hmm.
on their stupid cat faces.
Yeah.
It's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
This is a 10 out of 10 performance.
Yeah.
And I just glorious.
So there's some lyrics in here that every time I heard it, I automatically thought that like these are my notes. I'm just going to read my notes out there. I always felt Memory was Grisabella's thought progression towards self-acceptance over being ousted by her old group.
Memories. Jen knows the words better. Surrounded by memories of the things that were things. Memories are things that you remember. Thoughts that are back there, but they're not happening now.
There's a nice crescendo part to that song where you can hear the orchestra kind of start to swell. And then that's when she does the touch me. It's so easy to leave me. And I really like that lyric because it really is about, like, it is so easy to walk away. But what I want you to do is give that extra effort to pay attention to me at this moment.
In the lyrics where she says, daylight, I must wait for the sunrise. I must think of a new life and I mustn't give in. When the dawn comes, tonight will be a memory too, and a new day will begin. I always feel like that's her saying, you know what? I've tried to kind of make things right with you guys, and you don't want to necessarily do that. You don't want to, you know, help me out, which is fine. You don't have to. I'm going to move on. I'm going to accept myself. And, you know, it kind of like speaks to Kat's temperament when you're like, I don't want you to pay attention to me. I don't want you to pet me, when they're like, OK, I'll go ahead and pet you. I'll go ahead and let you. And I don't know, like, maybe it's just kind of a surface reading. But
I think that that's very true of cats, is that they will isolate when they've been hurt. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the separation of self from the thing that caused you harm, even if that thing would also bring you comfort, it makes perfect sense for me that she feels both ways, that she longs to be loved and accepted in this moment, but that, mm-hmm. that she also needs to be away from it and nursing these things that, yeah, you might see the scar left behind, but you don't know how she's still wounded on the inside. And that's what makes that song so, like, just...
Right. And like, stepping away from, like, the cult, idea. It's, I mean, the idea of, like, you know, the Heaviside Layer and rebirth, like, something that is, like, you can't really, like, forgive someone until you're willing to recognize that they need another chance. So basically, like, a rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
They need another chance. And I mean, like, I'm not saying that if someone did something crappy or shitty to you, that you have to forget that. Because if you know that someone is making a genuine effort to kind of come in and you can see that effort, then like in any kind of a relationship, you have to give them room to breathe. And it's not forgetting, it's recognizing that, yeah, this is something that they did in the past to hurt me, but they are obviously making a change. They're trying to meet me on my terms, and that might not necessarily be easy for them.
And it might be impossible. Like, we don't know. What, like, here's the thing. You'd have Uncle What's-His-Face, right? Who's, like, the best uncle you've ever had. But if you find out he was Uncle Nazi What's-His-Face, it flavors it, right?
Yeah.
So we don't know what she did in her past, especially in this movie, the specific rendition.
Yeah.
Because she was associated with...
McCavity.
McCavity, who's a piece of garbage. And we don't know what kind of power-seeking, power-struggle, like, depravity he got. Depravity of McCavity. Like, we don't know what he's done. But we assume it's pretty bad. Because right. He's putting people in garbage boats with right. old, scary men who try to put them off planks.
Yeah. He was willing to kill old Deuteronomy to get what he wants. And it's like, he was, yeah, kind of like, you know, he didn't kill the competition outright. But he was almost willing to kill Deuteronomy to get what he wanted.
Yeah. So we don't know. We don't know what level of forgiveness that they're committing to, but there's very little doubt in our minds that she is genuinely there, genuinely accepting of who she was, mm-hmm. and willing to accept whatever future has to happen. But if everything's going up anyway, you might as well Hail Mary.
Right.
For the chance at a new start of not seeing all the ugly that you had to go through. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the thing. As a person who has had some fairly dark thoughts not too long ago, if your options are to not be anymore or to go completely wild card and try something that seems out of character, well, here's the thing. You're talking about not being a character anymore, so you might as well do something out of character.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're like, the only way I think I'll feel alive is if I cut all my losses and I'm in Brazil in the next 6 months. Honey, go to Brazil.
Yeah.
You know? So she's like, oh, there's nothing left for me. I might as well try to get into this chandelier.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, right. But then, okay, so 10 out of 10, goosebumps. So then we have Judy, right?
Right. And then this is like the addressing of cats, I believe. It's like the end. It's the last song.
No.
It's a reprise of Beautiful Ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so quick.
Yeah.
I intentionally left this place blank. my only note on that one little, she only says like two or three lines from Beautiful Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now she knows all the cat stuff.
Yeah.
After. She said, I had 3/4 of an evening with these guys, and now she knows everything about cats.
Mm-hmm.
Girl, same. So now we're at Journey to the Heaviside Layer.
Right.
And here's my thought. So Grizzle Belle is escorted to the broken, or at least defunct, chandelier that is attached to a hot air balloon And I looked at it and I was like, that could hold more than one cat. Why can only one cat go to the Heaviside Lair? Why does only one cat get to go? They all want to go. A lot of them want to go. Probably not Victoria. She just got a hot piece.
Right.
Okay, whatever.
In a cult, it would be that thing that happens is actually a really horrible thing for that person that gets... It's like a sacrifice. Like when we were watching The Walking Dead and they got to build the wall by killing one person at a time to be zombies, to be on the outer perimeter of their town. Like,
it's Fear of the Walking Dead.
In this, it's like, if it were a cult, you would not want to be the one that goes up into the,
She obviously does. They don't call it anything. It's just the apparatus they use to get to the Heaviside.
Oh, absolutely. And isn't Jennifer Hudson like an American Idol? Isn't she?
I think so.
So, you know, she got there in real life too. It's nice.
Yeah.
She got to be the one.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so then immediately after I was like, that thing could carry more than one person, more participant, one more cat, right? So then McCavity jumps off. He jumps off the roof and grabs like the one dangly strap that's off of this thing. And he's just like, Rah! And like payoff is super quick because they go over the top of a building and he gets smacked onto the head of some old dead white dude.
Mm-hmm. His statue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he can't like magic himself off of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it's, maybe it's because he took his jacket off and you can only magic in that kind of jacket.
I don't know. He magicked at the end of the music number.
Oh.
Maybe that was like the end of his powers. Maybe he just needs a long rest in order to gain all of his spells back.
I'm sorry. You've used all your spells. I mean, if it had been a cantrip, you could have. Sorry, my friend. But you know, it's going to be at least 6 hours. What are you going to do? Long rest, friend.
I think Jen's checking something.
Jennifer Hudson was a finalist on American Idol, but I don't believe that she was the one that was picked.
She should have been. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're all at the bottom dancing about the heavy side. And here's what I've realized. In the same way that when they fixed all of their leotards to be furry suits, that sounds wrong. But in the same way when their hair looks all uniform while they're dancing, it doesn't make any sense in a physical space. They fixed all of their dancing. I'm sure they did it when they were putting in the CGI hair, but they like... took out any imperfections, and so that everyone looks like a little weird robot who has no roly-poly bits, all of the really interesting fuzzy bits, all of like the bald weird, you know, the things that make a human cute.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all gone.
Yeah.
And that makes me a little mad.
Also, is this the last musical number, right?
Nope, this is 4 out of 10. We got one more.
Oh, okay.
Four out of 10 on the journey to the Heaviside Lair.
Okay. Yeah, because like, okay, so 4 out of 10
for that stupid little number.
Yeah.
And now we come to the last song.
The last song where we finally, okay, so throughout the stage musical, you see like this, the cat's like Munko Strap is actually like talking to the audience and being like, oh, you don't know what a Jellicle cat is. Well, let me go ahead and tell you. And there's like, you know, you have other cats who are addressing, like Jenny Anydots or Bustopher Jones or Gus the Theater Cat. These are characters that are not necessarily singing about themselves in the entire time. Like, they're mostly, like, introduced by other cats, again, to the audience. So there's a lot of fourth wall breaks in the musical, like direct ones. This is our first and only fourth wall break, and it's like, why bring this in now? I mean, if Victoria is supposed to be the surrogate or like the audience surrogate, then why not just like be like, okay, Victoria, now at the end of everything that you've learned, we're going to tell you how you address a cat.
Yeah, straight to camp. Oh, there are like a whole bunch of points on this song that I don't like. But my first one was when it came on, I realized I had blocked it from my memory, and my notes are just like, oh no, it's coming. And she's like, and this is Dame Judi Dench, our good old dudes, being like, well, how you address a cat? The first thing you need to know is a cat is not a dog.
Really? I don't think I had ever noticed that.
I am really glad that I shot, what's the stuff they numb your mouth with?
Novocaine?
I'm really glad I shot Novocaine straight into my eyeball because it would still be twitching now. My face is numb, but I don't have to twitch about it. I'm super mad about straight to camera, a cat is not a dog. Although she does say when you address a cat, you need to take off your hat. And at that exact moment, Mr. Mistopheles takes off his hat and like bows his head. And I'm like, gentlemen, I love that.
Yeah.
And they're all, did you notice they're all dancing on lion statues?
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry. They could have ended it right when dude landed on top of the tower and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
They could have ended it with the balloon exiting the building.
Which is pretty much how it ended anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except, and like maybe they take like the Heaviside Lair, the last, not the last number of the musical, but the last one that we talked about. They just like stretch that out longer and longer until like it, like if they wanted to end on music, the instrumental could have just like, you know, kept going as she's like going into the clouds to die in an atmospheric lair.
It does disappear into, it does disappear into the sky. And that's really but okay, when Judy then, okay, so after this song, which I rate a 1 out of 10,
good.
Thank you. She turns to Victoria and is like, I truly believe, I can't do a Dench, sorry, but she's like, I truly believe you are a jellicle cat, a dear little cat.
I think that was perfect.
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
thank you. So I think Dench was trying to give us this. I think she was taking Jellicle Cat, and when she says directly after it, a dear little cat, that's what Jellicle is supposed to mean.
That's actually true. So I
really?
Looked up,
oh no!
I looked up the meaning of Jellicle Cat, and T.S. Eliot has sort of broken language versions of both dogs and cats, and Jellicle is a broken up dear little cat, broken language.
I got that from Dench. She gives such good context.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm okay with that ending part. The song sucked, but that last line was good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. I think the balloon goes poof and we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. We're done. Oh, we're done.
head cannon. Grisabella becomes Victoria. Like, it's a whole circle of...
Yeah.
Life and
time. She gets
time.
Thrown back into a shitty life? Because I thought the whole deal was no, that you got a better one.
No, no. It's okay. So Victoria comes in as Grisabella is leaving.
Oh, I get that. Yeah. I get that. But she talks about, I mean, she shows up in a sack. So, like, yeah. It's not, her first bit isn't very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the life of a Jellicle cat. You don't get the house cat thing. You get the street cat with, I don't know.
I don't think Jellicle excludes house cats because Jenny Annie Dots was a house cat.
That's true. But it also means that having a bad history doesn't enforce or remove you from being a Jellicle cat.
Also, Victoria's life is technically getting better.
Mm.
She has a family now.
Mm-hmm.
She was abandoned and now she's been found.
Yeah. But
My thought was, so does this mean that she's going to get, because we saw Mr. Mistopheles and Victoria, they're a couple now. Are they going to have kittens and one of them is going to be Grisabella?
I will take that.
Yeah,
I would take that.
Are do you know, Lydia, by the 89 version, if they are a thing in that?
No, they're not. I mean, like the closest that Victoria as so like in the stage musical that I'm aware of, there were, you know, you have like all of these different cats. There's probably like 20 to 30 performers and they all have their own different like roles to play and they all have their different characters to play. And Victoria does get like a dance number with another cat, but that cat is Plato. It's not Mr. Mistopheles. And that's like a full-on dance number. If you go to the YouTube page for him, there's actually like it says Victoria and Plato. The cat that Mr. Mistopheles has is more like an assistant cat, and she's more like she's like a Siamese cat. So don't know what her name is though.
Showgirl. I can't wait to do Showgirls with you guys. It's gonna be so bad.
The burn.
Ladies, applauders. Should we do shocked or applaud first?
I'm gonna do shocked.
Okay.
Okay, so like my shocked moment was,
if we have the same one, it's gonna be amazing.
I don't think it is. Like I'm just gonna, so my biggest shocked moment was probably how much the VFX, it's not like actually in the movie, it was more all of the fact that there was this movie was poorly mismanaged. And it wasn't ever going to be like a super, like, I think it was going to be a spectacle because the musical is always such a spectacle. But like, I really kind of had hope that they wouldn't have managed it as poorly as they did. And I heard all of the horror stories. I wasn't planning on going to see it when I saw the trailer, but it was still enough to make me be like if that trailer had really popped and like these weren't just, you know, people with CGI'd cat bodies. Like, I would have probably been more interested in it. And it just feels like, so going back to the butthole cut, talking about that.
Does it exist?
Okay,
does
so it? I don't think it actually exists. But the Vanity Fair article that I pulled from, which talked about it, I think it was more of an opportunity for the source who talked about the fact that there was a butthole cut. I think it was an opportunity for that source to actually talk about something that I think was a lot more egregious, was the fact that, and this is what the source alleges, is that the director, Tom Hooper, knew nothing about animation and was, as the source quotes, horrible, disrespectful, demeaning, and condescending towards the employees. They worked about 90-hour weeks for months on the project. For example, the two-minute trailer, they were given 6 months to complete the animation, the animated for that, and then they were only in about 4 months to do the film that was an hour and a half. So, and also, like, they were so rushed on the project that we'd have no time for anything. So when people, this is what the source says, so when people say, oh, the effects were not good or the animation no good or anything, that wasn't their fault. They weren't given any time. And I think it's indicative of just, like, if you want to go ahead and make a movie and put, you know, over $100 million into making something, why not plan it out so that way it actually comes to fruition? Why not understand it? And this was like, this is my whole big rant. Why are you willing to go ahead? And I mean, a lot of people did go ahead and throw the VFX. There was a speech that was done by James Corden and Rebel Wilson, and they pretty much throw the VFX team under the bus. And it was like at the Academy Awards. And I'm like, anybody who's willing to do that, tell me the purpose of a right click on a computer. Because if you cannot do that without having to Google it, shut the fuck up. These are people who are essentially in a service industry, mm-hmm. and you are not giving them the time of day. You are not giving them the ability or the room to breathe. And you think that doing anything that has to do with computers is like flipping on a switch, and it's not. And you really just, and it just really, really just aggravated me so much that it's hard to like, that's why I poke fun at the producers of this, because they didn't know what they were doing. They knew what they wanted, but they didn't know how to get there. Mm-hmm. And they really just needed to go ahead and say, this is what we want. Can you do that for us? And Tom Hooper was not the guy to do it. I would have given it to Randy Rainbow or Rachel Bloom. So
I would have given it to James Cameron. He built the whole system for Avatar.
That's a great point.
I'd have given it to Bob Odenkirk.
Thumbwars.
Everybody goes, wee, wee, wee.
It would have been like, mew, mew, mew. But I agree. Yeah. Because these are people who, it's not about necessarily taking it seriously. It's giving the art the time to become what it should have been.
Right. And this stuff doesn't happen overnight. And like, they were doing changes up until the premiere. Like, even Tom Hooper was editing it. And I'm like, this just screams of poor management decisions.
Yes. Okay. So my shocked is hand in hand with yours, but it sounds opposite.
Okay.
I say that this movie is plagued by the fact that it's overworked. So whereas I do say how it brings me out of it, some of the CGI stuff, largely the physical mm-hmm. performances I enjoyed. And but like the things that were overdone. Okay. So examples that are not that. Dame Judi Dench and Ian McKellen, both household names. Everybody should know if they don't know these persons. You can tell that the director was like, yes, here are your lines. Please do them. And then left them the fuck alone. And if they didn't do that, then those two actors had enough balls to be like, I got this. Mm-hmm. And they delivered the performance you'd expect from either of those persons. But everyone else. You can tell that they pulled the plunger on them. Like there was a squeezing happening to them. They gave 100%. No one lacked in energy or intent in their performance. But you could tell that it wasn't what it could have been. They left no room for options. So the editing couldn't have been that. I mean, if you only got one shot, and as an editor, you decide that you want to tweak an emotion, you have to have options to be able to do that, a different angle, a different delivery. And if you've got like these options, you've only got 5 Lego bricks and you are making a block, so go for it. Like, it's going to be what it is, and it can't be much different than that.
Right.
And that, in that way, I think that it was overworked. Like, right. The jokes seemed really forced on people that I know are funny, whose humor, you know, I might not always super agree with, but, like, I've seen a bunch of Rebel Wilson stuff, and for the kind of comedy she delivers, she's good, and I like it. But you can tell when she's been handed a script and has been told to stick to it. And Gordon, I mean, he... That kind of and I'm going to say this, and I will get canceled, that that kind of, like, foppish, like, loose-wristed humor that he does, like, you know, I'm just sensitive about my weight, that moment.
Yeah.
It's in his wheelhouse, but you could tell that he was under the squeeze while he was delivering it, and I was like, I guess I don't find that as funny, like... It doesn't have the time for the delivery that it needs. Anyways, that's what I mean by overworked. I feel like I can see what you mean by rushed, but something can be overworked while it's being rushed.
Agreed. Okay. Fully agreed. And sometimes you get the worst things because you're overworking your staff and rushing them at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you saw the list of all of the effects designers and stuff, mm-hmm. that was like, it finished out the credits. I didn't count, but it had to have been like, over 1,000 people.
Do you know how much it is to produce one animated feature for 90 minutes?
I don't know.
It's $100 million. It is not cheap to do.
Yeah.
And like, I would not, like, even hearing like everything, like, so when Sonic, we had talked about the Sonic trailer that came out, like that was again, a poor management decision. Because all they had to do was pull like actual like CGI Sonic movies that had already been brought out, and they could have pulled from that and said, yeah, this is what they like. Or they could have just like pulled up 100 Sonic fans, which there's probably more on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And they could have just been like pulled up the top 100 Sonic fans on YouTube and been like, we would like you to see this and let us know what you think about it. And they would have told them, this sucks. Change it. And even if they gave them like swaths, then they could have been like, which one do you prefer, you know? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. like the more cartoonish one is the one that they went with. But again, they had to like push the VFX. They had to push the effects team to do that.
Well, there's this culture right now that's like, and it's a Star Wars thing, really. And maybe Jen, who is more versed, I'm sure, can elaborate. But there's this idea that you can't please all the fans. And so if you try to pull on some of specific, you know, spin-off fandom type things, you're going to make it too niche for the broad audience. And so it's better to go with the corporate pulling from, you know, the status, you know, the groups, the focus groups, and you're pulling from maybe from broader things, but or really popular works, like a published book about Star Wars, right? Like unauthorized, but it sold 300 million copies, that kind of level of work, as opposed to, you know, grassroots in it down, you know, searching up a Facebook page, you know, going on some fanfic sites and finding what like the real nitty gritty fans really think about a work. And because corporations don't function like that, a lot of what makes something really good disappears. Like I rewatched Muppets Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there are so many factors from the old movies about this that I like. I like all the cameos. I like some of the catchy songs that Jen hates. I like the production quality is amazing. Practical effects, which are always one of the best things about Muppet films. And I was like, what about this makes it so that this is probably the last time I'm going to watch this movie? I've seen it twice. Mm-hmm. I'm done now. And I was like, why? Because Tina Fey's in it and I love her. And she has like a Russian accent. And I want to imitate that. What is wrong with me? And I realized that it was the heart of the Jim Henson Company from 20 years ago. It's the heart of films I haven't seen since A Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Right.
So, Jim Henson.
Yeah.
That was where I stopped. But, yeah, I miss that.
Agreed. And I think that kind of, like, pulls broader audiences, that heart, that, you know, authentic heart, that honesty. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at anything that Studio Ghibli's made, and that's nothing but, like, heart. That's mm-hmm. nothing but heart. And like some of those are like, would you think that a movie that, you know, was heavily steeped in Japanese mythology would make it big in America as like Princess Mononoke? I mean, I wouldn't think so because you have the language barrier. You have this entirely different culture, but it worked because it was managed properly. They got Neil Gaiman to translate that script. That was the smartest decision they ever made.
Yeah, because he's got the right level of spooky and he's a genuine person from what I've read and seen. And like, I like smart and spooky and he does that really well.
Right.
And
but he also took the time to go ahead and like, he's a hard worker.
Uh-huh.
He does not have anything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they probably also gave him a lot of time to do research and, like, again, pre-production. And that to me screams good management decisions versus a company that is just wanting to make an easy cash grab, wanting to get, you know, this is part of the reason why I think that they were trying to vie for like some sort of an Oscar or an Academy Award or a nomination. And that's why they attached Tom Hooper to it. They had a different song. And it was just like all of these like things that management was like, these are our goals. These are the things that we want. How do we get there in the quickest and cheapest amount of time?
Yeah. And I have, as I have become grizzled and ancient, what I have found is it is better for management to have a good scope of what an employee can do and then let them do it.
Right.
And maybe guidance. But guidance is not the same thing as like rushing hard against a person and expecting a different result. Like you can't be like, hey, pâtissier guy, you're in charge of soup now. Get that soup done.
Right.
They're going to show up with a grilled cheese sandwich and you're going to be like, what the? And we're going off the rails. I'm right. Sorry. But like, it's another food metaphor. Why do I always go there? Yeah. It doesn't matter. I think that this could have been a powerhouse for exactly the reasons that you say that it was not. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Jen, did you have a shocked?
Yeah, I kind of going along with what Lydia said about the digital effects, but really, to me, the real difficulty or the problem with what I think a lot of people saw was more around the face capture than the motion capture. It was in that uncanny valley. And then I think about like movies like the updated Lion King, where you can see all that emotion and facial structure inside of the animals. And I'm thinking, why didn't they just do cat faces with the face cap?
That would have been amazing. Zazu was great.
Yeah. If I was a director and I had seen what the result was in the 2-minute preview, I might have said, we got to go back to the studio and explain, hey, look, this is what it looks like with our current technology and the budget that we're after. Do you think that there should be something else? And introduce a focus group if you need to. I don't always approve of focus groups. I don't think you always need to. But if I remember the history of this, this is one where they prevented focus groups or previews from really happening. So it just came out in theaters with nobody seeing it. And another thing that we didn't really, I mean, we kind of touched on was this re-release of a movie maybe a week after it came out with better visual effects and taking out Judi Dench's human hand with a wedding ring on it and putting in an actual cat hand. So there was an updated version of this maybe 1 or 2 weeks after it got released, and they had to inform all of the theaters to download the new version of the movie, and they sent out the hard drive to those that couldn't download it, and all of that adds up as extra money too. So to me, it seems like they tried to capture something about the stage that they couldn't capture in the movie. And if they had gone Hollywood with the way that the cats are, I think that it would have been better translated, maybe, and maybe even more capture a younger audience than it would have, because I could see a lot of middle-aged women going into the theaters thinking, okay, I'm going to see basically what I saw in the 80s or wanted to see in the 80s but never got the chance. And this is I think Sean Fax says it's the 6th longest running, it might be the 4th longest running, Sean can correct me, theater performance. So you can still go out and see this. Well, you can't right now because of COVID, but I mean, it is a long running thing, but really what it boils down to for me is they thought audiences wanted a translation of stage to screen, when I think that they really should have adapted the original T.S. Eliot stuff and put in some better face cap or put in some actual creature effects.
I will take straight up kittens over their faces.
Right.
I think they spent a lot of money on those faces, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got to have James Corden be James Corden and Rebel Wilson be Rebel Wilson, I guess. And
you don't pay Dame Judi Dench money and not have her face in there.
Mm-hmm. But they could have very easily in pre-production been like, we need to figure out, like, what is this going to look like? How is it going to translate? And we need different options, because this seems like it was all different, all brand new. And they were trying to, like, pave the way. And like what I would have, like, and I'm not a director as someone who has seen like the side effects of not planning ahead in other companies that I've worked for, planning at the beginning and knowing where you want to go and how you get there is important. And sometimes you need several different options, and the other people who are making the decisions for you, you need to be like, okay, well this is one option. How does that look? What is this one option? How does that look? What does this option look like, and how can we get there? And you need like several different ones. You can't just like, you know, carry all of these things and like throw them up against a wall and hope that they stick. That's, I mean, like, especially if you're dealing with $100 million, but some of these companies, they're billion-dollar companies. So $100 million is not that bad. And I'm really glad that everybody got, I hope that the VFX, I hope that everybody got paid.
To complement that, I will say that innovation is not completely unplagued by falling on its face on occasion.
Do you know who innovates, and I think innovates really well without breaking the bank? Nintendo. Like, they had the Wii. They had the Wii U, which was atrocious. But they all, do you remember Duck Hunt? That, how innovative and how memorable is that from your childhood, where you have this like plastic gun and you were going up to the screen and you were hitting those ducks right on the screen?
I still hate that dog.
Yeah.
He laughed at me so much.
But that is innovative. And like, I have never had a buggy Nintendo game. Maybe that's just me. But like, I feel like Nintendo really understands that, like, and this is an issue that plagues the video game industry, is where you have like people who think that they have a good product, but they haven't really tested it out well. Mm-hmm. And so when it hits the market, it just explodes and there's all of these bugs, and it's pretty common. But I've never had that issue with Nintendo. Mm-mm. And maybe I'm just not in the video game realm as much as I could be. And they have those issues and I just don't know about them. So
no, I agree with you.
Yeah. So it's like, it goes back to poor management versus good management. And I think good management would have dictated, we need to see what everything is going to look like, so that way we know which road to take. Mm-hmm. And like, if they did that and this was the best road that they got, then it kind of makes me wonder what kind of a trash fire would have been in the past. So the other ones. So
Jen, why don't you start us off with your applaud moment?
Wow. Okay, I've seen this movie twice now, once in the theaters and once at home. And although I feel like it should have been a direct-to-video, should have started on HBO Max instead of eventually getting there. Here's where I'm going with this. I just recently watched Wonder Woman 1984. And if you know where Kristen Wiig's character goes in that, right at the end, I cannot blame Cats for being the way that Cats is, because Kirsten Wiig's character in that I don't want to spoil anything. It's available for, it's probably not available by the time you hear this anymore on HBO Max, but you can probably rent it, pick it up somewhere. Nothing has really translated in the last year. I mean, nothing has really changed in the way that we would try to make a hybrid chimera type situation with a with a person and a cat. It just does not work. So I don't blame the movie for that. I just blame our evolution. Something in our evolution says that doesn't look right. That's not something I should be scared of or whatever. I will also say, though, that even though it hasn't changed much, I wouldn't say that it's just been like the last couple of years, because I remember the sphinxes in Mirror Mask being facial capture, and that being pretty much exactly the same. not as much has changed in the last 20 years as far as trying to imagine what a face of a human would be like on something that isn't human. It has not translated well. It's still, even with like freaking Luke Skywalker,
it was all right.
Yeah, I got thoughts.
I agree with you on that. I think the practical effects when you're talking about someone's face hold up. Like, I'm thinking Star Trek Next Generation. That was like 50% facial prosthetics.
Yeah.
And those still hold up.
Yeah, they're believable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you recognize it as a costume, you're like, oh, that's good. And you can tell the good ones from the bad ones right away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Okay. So I will do my applaud moment.
Yeah.
My applaud moment is, because I want you to go out on a note, my applaud moment is that there was so much, okay, now I know that my shocked was, it was overworked, but my applaud is that there was so much work in this. Like, I too hope that all the
VFX.
VFX guys, I hope they all got money. I hope they got paid hourly and overtime and all the benefits. And I hope that they like all got a letter of recommendation as they gave all of corporate the bird as they walked out. I think, just Ian and Judy. I mean, like, their performances were so exquisite. The effort you can see that, like, the performers are giving makes my heart swell. And freaking Jennifer Hudson. Oh, my gosh. Like, she might make me buy a song with ballads on it. And that's weird because that's not me. I don't own any.
Just listen to the techno version, I guess.
I think I might have to do that. I'm just saying that there were things that were inspiring about this. And it's none of the stuff that spiraled that you could tell. And you can always tell, like when a kid's freaking out, you can tell if the kid's just having a hard time or if the parent's screwing up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, or if like a kid's giving a performance and you can tell if they're being lazy or if they're being stressed out by like the parents or the director or something. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, all of these actors are giving amazing performances. You can tell that a lot of thought was put into the aesthetics of the production, even if I don't like the results of it, you know?
Yeah. My applaud moment was just pretty much that the performances through the roof, like everybody who is on screen is like giving it 110, even though that's not mathematically accurate. But like they really just, that is the one thing that I found enjoyable was the way everybody worked together. The fact that like you can tell that the people when they were doing the dancing, if they felt overworked, I couldn't feel that. Mm-hmm. Like it felt like everybody was enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard to like knock it down. Like I will talk about how management needs to be, if they're going to be in charge of something, they need to own it when it fails and not throw anybody under the bus. Mm-hmm. And so, but like the workers, the people who are actually there, they're just trying to get a paycheck. And I think that everybody tried, like, even like they did all of the fur by hand on a computer, and that took hours and hours and hours and hours. And it was like, those people are working their butts off.
Well, they made a big deal out of like Merida and Scully's relative hair and fur, like, and how long those things took to master. And they looked better than this film. But there's also 100 actors in this plus or whatever. And they all have to be furried up.
Yeah.
That's said wrong. Sorry. But like, it's just amazing. And they all should get all the money. Mm-hmm. And the producers should be broke and gone.
Yeah. Which I think kind of, I would hope is what happened, you know, that they didn't make any money back. And that's on the producers. And, you know, sometimes that happens when you don't manage things correctly or you just make a bad investment. Yay for capitalism, right?
Mm. And stage. Woo!
So I think that's it.
Applauders, you made it through episode.
What?
21? 22. Good gosh, February. I hope you guys had a lovely Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Or an even better day after Valentine's Day when everything's 50% off.
Yay. And you made it through this movie, and now we can all just put this on the shelf and never talk about it again.
If you get a second, find us on Patreon or Facebook or Twitter. That'd be great. All of our links are on our website, shockshowplod.com, or in the description.
We are all caught up on our unbleeped episodes on Patreon as well. So if you want to become a $1 per month subscriber, you will get those unbleeped episodes. And it'll also be considered a very great support mechanism for us so we can pay for hosting and maybe even search engines in the near future. You can also visit us at shockedandapplaud.com. That will have all of our social links at the top, as well as several options to find us on your preferred podcasting application. We also really appreciate your reviews, especially on Apple Podcasts and podchaser.com. Twitter and Instagram, we can be found on at shockedapplaud and Facebook at shockedandapplaud.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Meow.
Hold on.
We're going to try to get Pitch to say something here.
Okay.
I'm a cat. Well, I'm a cat.
Hey, become a movie star. Hey, talking to this thing.
She's not wanting to do it.
Meow.
I shouldn't have gotten her so stoned.
Meow. Meow. Get in. Get in. Get in. Meow.
She's dead weighting you right now.
Meow.
Well, at least we know the trick for the next time we record.
Until next month, this is Jen McQuaid.
Oh, this is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
This concludes part three of our review of 2019's Cats, a Plotter. Thank you for joining us for our discussion of a film that The Guardian says will haunt viewers for generations. In need of some additional content about things you'd probably like to unsee? I Think We're Doing It podcast just released an episode discussing the art of catfishing. And if you have a twisted enjoyment of nightmare fuel like we do, Nokeville has a new episode touring the Nightmare Realm. Hey, this is your audio engineer and meow 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 mixer, Jen. Are you a podcaster who'd enjoy having some help reviewing a movie or joining in conversations about film? We're currently filling slots for this season and would love to do a crossover with you. Email us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com to connect with us. Stay tuned soon for our release of this month's Shock Talk with Sean and Maddie. And we'll be back March 9th for another episode and can't wait to share more laughs, irreverent dialogue, and applaudable moments with you. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
Kitten, you want treats? You want some treats?